Oh, Caligula!
Yes, what is it?
Don't lean against that pillar!
What?
I say, don't lean against that pillar!
Why?
The workmen say it hasn't quite set up yet.
Don't lean against what?
That pillar you're standing next to!
You mean this one?
Yes, that one!
I shall lean against it if I so wish!
Caligula, now! Don't lean against me!
The Fall of the Roman Empire will not be presented at this time in order to bring you the following special podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, we interrupt our program of dance music to bring you a special bulletin from the Intercontinental Radio News.
It's time for Peculiar Podcast, hosted by Pat Cashman.
Gorgeous to look at.
And Lisa Foster.
She's dangerous.
See, you're on.
Ready or not, it's Pat and Lisa.
Can you dig it?
Yeah, I can dig it, yeah.
It's love and time.
Lisa, I don't know if you have heard of a singer-songwriter named Kat Janis, but she passed away at the age of 31 of cancer, but left behind a pretty big hit. And this dance track that she released, really just before she died, she wanted all the rights to this song, transferred to her 7-year-old son. And the song is called Dance You Out of My Mind, and it is a TikTok sensation. Crazy. And the song is pretty huge. And then now, of course, people are starting to rediscover some of her other work. But she was just a geologist by trade. Did music on the side, but it's really what she wanted to do. And as she's heading out the door at only the age of 31,
wow,
she releases this dance track, which is monstrous. And she wanted all the rights to this song and any others going to her 7-year-old son, of course, who survives her.
And the rights, just so I understand, because I don't understand the music industry, when you say well, can we assume that means that any money? I don't even know how people make money.
It'd be money.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know how people are making money anymore. I think most artists make their money performing in concerts.
Mm-hmm.
The record industry is weird. I don't know how, because people are helping themselves to music for free, so I don't know how people get paid. I really don't.
Yeah, I know. Royalties, I don't know how they're kept track of anymore. I mean, I know in radio, we had a certain limit we could play. You couldn't play a whole song because otherwise we'd have to pay the artist for the song. Wasn't that a thing?
Yeah. When we were a talk station, you could not play entire songs for that reason. Yeah, you had to have rights. But there was a license that the talk stations that we were on had that would permit a partial playing of some of the song, but not the entire.
Like
entirety
20 seconds, and then you cut it off, mister.
Yeah, something like that. But, of course, we always violated the rules on our show.
Because some songs just need to have the whole song played. I mean,
they do.
The Red Sovine songs, we had to play the whole thing. It's a
story
song.
Yeah, exactly. Like this one.
My dad was a man that knew his own mind. And I remember when he'd call us all together, and he'd say, family, it's love and time.
Now we're going to have to pay. What did you do that for?
Well, I didn't want to even tell you this, but I spent 5 of the last 7 days in jail because of this issue. Jail's
Why
not so bad.
Call me?
I, well, I You weren't my first call. I'm sorry, but I needed bail money, and I need a lot of it, and I didn't.
And you knew it wasn't me.
I didn't know if you had it or you would give it, so I called. Well, it sounds like I'm name dropping now, but I called Bill Gates. He gave me half, and then my buddy, my close buddy Elon Musk, gave me the rest, plus some walking around money. Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, you should have called me. I could have given all of you. You didn't have to do halvesies with those guys.
Yeah, well,
whatever.
Next time I'm calling you, that's for sure. And then a 72-year-old singer, a guy from India, he sang what they called guzzles or lyric love songs. Guzzle is spelled G-H-A-Z-A-L-S, or A-L, unless it's plural.
Wait,
but
what?
Guzzles
Can you back up, please?
Okay.
Spell it again slowly, please.
G-H.
Yeah.
I'll do what they do on telemarketing calls and others.
Okay.
G as in guy. H as in...
Harry.
Hilarious. A as in... whole. Z as in Zorro.
Okay.
A as in also a hole. L as in lumbago. Guzzle.
Okay, so
guzzle. Guzzle.
Okay, got it. Guzzle.
Pronounced guzzle. Guzzle.
It sounds like a foreign city, guzzle, but it's not pronounced that way. Guzzle.
No, it is a Indian name for lyric love songs.
Ah.
These songs have to be at least five stanzas, and they follow other certain rules, but they're very much love songs about marriage, love, loss, sadness, and all these things. Really quite beautiful songs, featured heavily in Bollywood movies for a period of time. This fellow, whose name is Pankajaj Udhas. I'm probably slaughtering it.
You probably got it right on the money. You probably pronounced it perfectly.
Udhas. He was 72. Singer from India. He is gone. And then, just as we went to press, as they say, with our last podcast, we learned of the passing of the stand-up comic Richard Lewis.
Yeah.
76 years old.
I'm paranoid about everything in my life. Even at home, on my stationary bike, I have a rear-view mirror, which I'm not thrilled about.
He had recently announced that he had Parkinson's disease,
right,
too.
Right, that was last year. Did you like his particular brand of comedy? He always played the misery. He was always miserable.
Yeah.
And everything bad was happening to him. Did you like that brand of comedy?
I did not like him. Out of the blocks for years and years. He was never a comedian that I gravitated to, but I came to really like him. He rose in the 70s and 80s, and he was in a few movies like Robin Hood, Men in Tights. That was a Mel Brooks movie. And it showed up many times as a semi-regular on Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Right.
The Larry David, he's always great in that. It's one of Larry's friends.
Yeah.
You never call me. You always pick the restaurant.
Are we married? I don't.
But Lewis's self-deprecating, he called himself the Prince of Pain. And as near as I can tell from people who knew him well, it wasn't really an act.
Right.
He just went out and was himself on stage. He was self-deprecating. He was uncomfortable with love and life and was riddled with self-doubt. I mean, all of that was on display in his act on stage as he would pace the stage wearing black clothing and grabbing at his hair and just he seemed like a man terribly uncomfortable and unhappy.
Yes, yes.
But it wasn't altogether an act, but it is how he kind of worked out his own therapy on stage.
I used to sit around the table with all the relatives. They used to put me down in harmony. It was like really an embarrassing thing. You'll never make it, you know, kind of thing.
Yep. The other thing about Richard Lewis, you know, everybody says, oh, here comes the grandmother from hell. Or, oh my God, we just picked up a dog at the pound. It is the dog from hell.
If you're paranoid about life and nervous, you see a mouse, it's like seeing a rhino walk in front of you, you know?
Well, as near as we can tell, that from hell construct was a Richard Lewis thing. He'd always do bits about the doctor from hell or the waiter from hell. And the Yale Book of Quotations credits him with the Blank from Hell, that they credit to Richard Lewis coming up with that construct. That's pretty cool right there.
Yeah, very interesting.
His last tour was called the Magical Misery Tour, which I thought was a great name. But he was, you can't say, oh, that Richard Lewis is just like that comic. Nobody was like him. He did his own thing, and he just did it raw and real on stage.
The crest, the Lewis crest, were two mental patients wrestling a pharmacist.
Richard Lewis, 76. And that's all I got.
Well, I got
many people kicked off. That's good.
Yeah, that's good. It was a good week for the living.
Yeah.
So I had just texted you right before we hopped on here.
You did?
Ooh. I did. Well, did let me look. Text?
Well, I look at my texts. Wednesdays, I look at my texts. And this one says, be right there. I'm brushing my teeth.
So, and I texted you moments ago. Do you know what ads are coming up on my, not on my phone, on my computer, the New York Post? Guess what ads are coming up?
Well, first of all, I don't see that text. Oh, wait a minute. Here it is. Oh.
You just read it.
I'm confused about where you're going with this, but so you're telling me that the sound of you brushing your teeth was heard by Alexa or whatever device you have. And that's when the toothbrush ads started flowing toward you.
I don't know, but I know this is nothing new, and people talk about this all the time. Like, you know, I was just thinking about butterhorns, and then all of a sudden, I get all these butterhorn ads on Google.
Well, but you're on to something
alarming.
Here because it used
alarming.
To be that you know, and my wife and I would do this as a form of entertainment. We'd say. If we wanted something, you know, like let's say Joanne Fabrics, we're looking for a picture frame.
Mm-hmm.
And so Patty will go, oh boy, you know what? Know what? Well, I sure hope they have a sale on picture frames pretty soon at Joanne Fabrics. I love Joanne Fabrics, and I sure hope we need a picture frame, but they're so expensive. But if they're on sale at Joanne, you know, and pretty soon, bing, 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 it's on her phone.
Yes.
Joanne's Fabrics, 40% off picture frames. It's eerie.
You got to be careful what you talk about because some weird shit will pop up on your screen. You're like,
well, you're not kidding. I mean, I'm sitting around. You know, I'm sitting around grousing about Trump all the time.
Yeah.
At home, and then you know, then my wife said, you know, if they're listening to you.
Yeah.
They're
going to come after you.
Trump's guys might come after you.
Yeah.
You don't know.
You better watch your back, Mister.
Yeah. So now I'm trying to use sign language, which we are learning.
You guys play charades a lot. Like she's like, okay, it's three words. One of them's a nasty word, but okay.
Yeah, it's not dump, it's not ump, it's not frump. What is it? I do worry about that, and because you know, if you engage your gadget, like, hey Alexa, how much wood could a woodchuck chuck?
A woodchuck would chuck about 700 pounds of wood on a good day with the wind at his back.
I don't know if you could hear that, but
yes, I can barely hear. But she doesn't. Here's what I love: she doesn't mock you for the ridiculous question you ask. She doesn't. No. She's just very matter of fact, like it's the most normal thing in the world for somebody to ask how much wood a woodchuck could chuck.
Have you ever asked Alexa a question with a lot of profanity in it? She will not answer you, or she'll scold you for using that language, or say, yes. I'm not going to answer that or something.
Don't speak to me like that.
Yeah, so they've got.
Have you ever yelled at her? I've yelled at her a couple of times when I'm asking her what the weather is,
yeah.
And she gives me some ridiculous answer, and I'm screaming at her like, "You're not listening to me."
Yeah, well, I do that, and I also, of course, stupidly say thank you after she gives me an answer.
I do too.
I'm saying thank you to a robot.
I do too.
Yeah.
But here's see this thing with the toothbrush, Pat, I didn't say anything out loud.
Right.
I
it was the sound of
you.
It.
No. What do you mean the sound of it? I'm not brushing my teeth next to her.
Oh, you're not?
No, I'm in my bathroom. She's not in my bathroom.
So she's eavesdropping on your text.
I don't think it's her.
Or someone is.
Yeah. My phone is like, it just, anyway.
They're conspiring. Right. They're co-conspirators. Yeah, Siri and Alexa are tight. That's my theory.
Yeah, they are. I came across something. I'm sure you have stuff, but I want to ask you a question, and it might be kind of personal. Will you answer me?
I don't know. I haven't heard the question yet. I'll probably bring my lawyers in. Well, let's see what the question is.
Have you ever stuffed something up your nose?
Mr. Cohen, would you come in here, please? Just sit there. I might need you in a minute. That's my lawyer. Have I stuffed anything up my nose? I don't think so. A friend of mine has had a lifelong sinus problem. Mm-hmm. And his nose was always stuffed up. Or it was running or something. So he would, I guess it was his invention. He would.
I know what you're going to say.
He would stuff Kleenex in his nose, both nostrils, and then he'd be breathing through his mouth. I remember sending him a birthday card one time where I drew a cartoon of a guy with Kleenex coming out of his nostrils, and he didn't think it was very funny. But, I mean, I have so many photos of him and me together, and he's got the Kleenex hanging out of his nose.
I've done that when I've had a cold that I couldn't. You know, like, but when I go to bed and I would have my nose would be leaking all over the pillow. So, yeah, I would go to bed.
Oh, yeah. I remember.
You mean you remember?
It makes me sad that you don't. I thought we had something going there with the nose thing because my nose drips too sometimes. But my wife went to nursing school in San Diego, and they would be in the classroom a lot of the times. And I don't remember, she doesn't even remember the woman's first name, but her last name was Meeks. And she was another nursing student. And so in the classroom, while they're listening to lectures and, you know, other things from professors and doctors and nurses, Meeks would, apparently she had nose problems too. Meeks would take Kleenex and turn and screw it so it became like a corkscrew, and then she would screw it up into her nose as far as it could go. It must have reached all the way into her brain. And then she would pull it out, and this is the thing that has always bothered me. And look at it.
Picking my nose, picking my nose, picking my nose is fun. Picking my nose, picking my nose, and then I flick it when I am done. Picking my nose, picking my nose, and then I flick it when I am done.
You know, people who pick their nose and then look at it? What are you looking for?
Well, you got to see if there's any bugs or blood. There's all sorts of things to be looking for in there.
If you're going to do that,
coming out of your body,
get it out of sight. I mean, don't be looking at it and holding it
up. Well, it's not like she was showing the rest of the class, going, "Hey,"
She kind of was, because she's oblivious to the fact you're in the middle of a classroom with a lot of other people around, and you know, people like to look at other stuff besides the teacher, and so she developed the appellation "Pick a Nose Meeks." it's kind of like a character in the Old West.
Oh boy, riding into town right now. Here comes Pick-a-Nose Meeks, and he looks angry.
And he's got Kleenex hanging out of his nose.
Yeah.
So when I was little, I had one of my cousins stuffed a bean up her nose, and she was Wait, what are you saying? Oh, yeah, for? Have you stuffed a bean up your nose?
No, I never did, but I know lots of kids who did that.
Yeah,
lots of
them. She stuffed a bean up her nose, and she was too scared. She couldn't get it out, and she was too scared to tell anybody, and it ended up getting infected, and they had to take her to the doctor. The doctor's like, well, it looks, here's the problem. She's got a bean in her nose.
That would make for That would make for an unfortunate obituary, wouldn't it? Dolores Swenson, 12 years old, died yesterday in a tragic bean incident. Just like her uncle Larry did in a separate bean incident. But that had more to do with gastrointestinal problems.
Right. And when I was little, I stuffed a marble up my nose.
Wow, that's impressive. Because you don't have very big nostrils.
I know.
You must have shoved that baby. I didn't think you could get a peppercorn up your nostrils.
Well, I did. And so if you can imagine, so the whole thing didn't go up. It just kind of went halfway. But the rounded part's so smooth that you couldn't really grab it and pull it back out. So I panicked and I ran to my mother and I'm panicked and wide-eyed. And my mom just looked at me. She rolled her eyes. She took her hand, she took her finger, she pinched the other nostril closed, and she said, blow.
Yeah.
And it popped right out. And then she rolled her eyes and went back to her book. She's like,
if you had a great uncle, Marvin Foster,
yeah,
he would have shown you that trick years ago as he blew his nose, the one nostril nose blow, into a potted plant.
Ah, oh, geez. We call that cowboy Kleenex.
Yeah, I know.
We've talked about that before.
Well, my wife's, and God love him, I miss him every day, but my wife's dad.
I know what you're going to say.
He would do it in public. She walked through a shopping mall with him.
Her dad.
Her dad. A big shopping mall, you know, where they're wide open, and they've got lots of potted plants in there, among other things.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Right next to the sunglass hut. He decides to hawk a loogie into the potted plant. That wasn't.
All right, so the reason I'm asking is I came across an article, and there is a Danish man who has set a record. And I want you to know that he set a record.
For the largest object up his nose?
Yeah, you're pretty close. He stuffed 68 matchsticks up his nose.
Oh, my God.
Sorry, I can't stop laughing. And, of course, I immediately thought of you when I read this article. So, yes.
Oh, naturally, yeah.
A Danish man stuffed 68 matchsticks, and there's a picture of him. I'll post it on our website. 68 matchsticks up his nose to set a world record. Surprisingly, it didn't really hurt, he said. He's 39 years old, and he said he was aided by, you alluded to this earlier, Pat, that he has fairly large nostrils and quite stretchy skin.
I mean, I guess that was just an inevitable challenge for him. I've got these big nostrils. I get cut from the basketball team. I'm not good enough to play football. What is going to make me special? What is going to be my moment of 15 minutes of fame? What is it going to be? I know. I'll stick 68 matchsticks up my nose because, frankly, 69 is just too damn many.
Well, now hold on a minute, mister. Hold on. Let me tell you. He could have clinched the Guinness World Record with only 45 matches. So the old record was 44, and he could have just shoved 45, but he said, hey, I have space for another 23. So he doesn't think he can beat his current record, but he hasn't ruled out trying. And I'm always astonished at the things that men do. I know I'm sounding sexist, to try to break world records.
Yes, that does sound sexist, and it's offensive.
And it's true.
Well, yeah, but that's not the point. It's just offensive. This guy sounds like the Joey Chestnut of matchsticks.
Yeah. Is that the hot dog eater? Yeah.
That's what that should be his next challenge. Joey Chestnut Schmeshnut. Let's see how many hot dogs he can shove up his nose. And that now we'll talk about a world record.
Yeah. Matchsticks. Geez, anybody can shove matchsticks up their nose. Anyway, so have you ever thought of a world record that did you ever aspire to shattering some world record of some sort?
It's not funny, but I took part several times in a emceeing a thing for the Tacoma Rotary Club. They put together, you know, Rotary's big thing for years was eradicating tuberculosis.
Oh.
Well, maybe it was polio.
Polio,
I think it was
TB. It is.
Yeah, around the world.
Ours is polio. I'm part of the Lake Forest Park Rotary Club.
Okay, so
it's polio.
So I should know the difference, but because I am seed these things several times.
Yeah, it's okay.
But the idea was to get a world record of drummers drumming simultaneously. And the guy who came up with the idea, a Rotarian, was a drummer himself in a rock band. So he thought, this would be cool. We get everybody. And it's not guys just going and hitting up, you know, turning a bucket upside down and banging right on it with a fork. These have to be real drum sets. Yeah. The whole thing and set up. So we did this several times on an annual basis. And it was really cool. There would be, I think we topped out at over 300 people.
Was this in one space?
You told me this before. Yeah, first time we did it was at the Tacoma Narrows Airport.
Oh, wow.
And it was in a big hangar there. But even at that, a good third of the people, luckily it was a sunny day, third of the people were out the front. They couldn't even get inside, so they had to set up their drums out on the out in the asphalt. But that was very cool. And then it kept getting bigger, so then we had to go to the Tacoma Dome, and I can't remember where we went after that, but all these drummers, and when they're drumming simultaneously, it is so deafening, you can't take it. So they give everybody earplugs when they come in, but that's not enough. But it's also very cool.
Yeah.
The coolest part of this thing was, well, one year, the former Seattle Symphony conductor, Gerard Schwartz, came and conducted the drummers drumming. That was pretty cool. And then one year we had Alan White, who passed away last year. He was the drummer with the band Yes, who lived in Seattle. But he was also a drummer on the Plastic Ono band, the John Lennon band. And so it is he who is playing drums on the song like Imagine. So we played the track Imagine, and then all these 300 plus drummers drummed along with it. It was just cooler than heck. It was really neat. So that's the only world record I've ever been a part of. There must be, first of all, you got to find something that nobody else has thought of yet.
Why? Oh, so you don't have anything to beat? You just set the record?
Yeah. Like,
I think it'd be more, I'd think it'd be much more, I don't know. I'd feel a little bit better about myself if I was able to beat somebody else's record. And just imagine them sitting with their head in their hands in the living room going, man, she shoved 69 matchsticks up her nose. Did 68.
Well, you know, women could easily get that record if they wanted to, but as you implied, men are the only ones stupid enough to go for it. But but a woman could steal that record away to make it.
I don't think so. I feel physically it. I don't know a lot of women with big man noses.
No, but they're used to doing stuff to themselves. They're used to, you know, poking themselves, curling their eyelashes, putting on lipstick, plucking all the time with tweezers. I mean, they can take the pain. I think a woman could grab that record away.
Are you suggesting something?
No, well, not really, but I'm just saying.
Okay, because I'm busy the rest of the day, so I don't have time to.
Well, I think you should learn to dream big.
To dream the impossible dream. To shove 68 matchsticks up your nose, and then to prove your nostrils are not tighter, to try the same thing with 68 lighters.
I did, when we were just talking just now, I thought, I'll bet there's not a world record for gargling.
What does that mean?
You know, without stopping. Gargling.
Let me look that up.
Who can gargle for the longest time? Damn it.
World record gargling.
I could go for that record myself right now.
The longest time. Wow, this came right up. Longest time gargling water. I don't know why it has to be a specific, because that actually is a good point. If you're like Listerine is painful. Like I can't take that in my mouth for much more than a half a second.
Yeah. Or, you know, scotch or something.
Oh, well, that'd be easy. But so Peter Craig. Well,
for you.
Apparently gargled water for 43.65 seconds. The gargling must be audible. You can't quietly gargle. Yeah. Who could quiet? That's sort of dumb. But yeah, there you go. Right there.
The audio is the, you know, only when you can hear it is it proof that you're gargling. You may say you're gargling, but if it's not audible, then it shouldn't count. So, yeah.
I don't think you can gargle quietly, can you?
Well, I don't know. I've tried.
Wait, hold on. Now this guy. Oh, there's different categories, Pat. There's categories for gargling water. This guy, different guy, has a world record for gargling orange juice. He gargled a quarter glass of orange juice for 53.
Pulp or no pulp?
Oh, that's a good question. 53, because that'd make me gag if there was a bunch of things floating around in it.
Oh, I know. Let me change the subject a little bit.
Okay. Well, you're the one who brought it up.
I was a guy. I was at a bar food place when Patty and I were eating lunch at this bar recently. And I saw two guys sitting at the bar, two buddies, obviously, sitting side by side. And the guy said, well, I'll have two more beers here, please. So the guy turns around. The guy behind the counter turns around. They got it on tap. He fills up their two glasses and puts it in front of him. And then the two guys, after the foam dies down, they sit there measuring who got the most beer. And I thought, this reminds me of as being a kid, especially with my brothers. Mm-hmm. My mom would pour us a glass of milk, and we'd we'd put them side by side. If another guy had like an eighth of an inch, 1/16th of an inch more or less than the other guy, we'd start getting all hot
fight
and bothered.
Would ensue.
Yeah, a fight would ensue. Hey, wait a minute. That ain't right. I thought that'd be kind of cool if at a state dinner in the White House sometimes, if the premier of, I don't know, Yugoslavia got all ticked off because the you know, Putin or something. Well, Putin wouldn't be at the White House, I guess.
Yeah.
But I would love to see that at some formal fancy pants dinner someplace. Because everybody,
the sommelier is pouring wine and into everyone coming around with the napkin on his arm and he's pouring the wine. And one of the guys has a litter of kittens because his is a little shorter than the guy next door.
This is a ripoff. We will declare war.
But here's the thing, Pat. Here's the thing. Men have been measuring things forever to see if they're, if they've got more or less than the guy next to them. It's just, it's a guy. Women don't do this.
Women don't do it.
We don't measure our things.
See, I always measure like who, what's the bigger piece of pizza pie, for example, or who's got the most, you know, mashed potatoes or, hey, don't use up all the gravy. I want some too, you know.
Well, That's understandable because you came from a family of, you know, 24 boys.
Yeah, you had to fight for your food.
30 boys, you had to fight for your food.
You gotta fight for your right. We'll be right back.
Speaking of world records and things, this isn't exactly on point, but kind of. What was the worst job that you ever had in your life? And for most people, I'm going to start by saying, I'll bet it was early in their life. The first jobs, usually, that you had to have as a young person coming up through the ranks.
Hi-ho, hi-ho, it's home from earth we go.
But what was the worst job you ever had?
It wasn't I don't really think I had worse bad jobs. I mean, I babysat was one of the first jobs I had, which, I mean, that's fine. And then I worked for a dog handler. So I guess the worst part of that job was picking up poop all the time. I had to pick up dog poop.
Oh, dog poop. Oh, dog.
Yeah. Okay. I had to pick up dog poop a lot. So that part of the job was not super fun.
For some people, that would be the best part of the job.
Oh, Pat.
So, why would that be the best part?
I guess you're just different.
I guess I am. And then I was a waitress, and I don't really – for me, it was never the job. The worst jobs I had were because the people I worked with were complete dicks. But that's – it wasn't the job itself. It was the people that I had to work with.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I've got some stories about those kind of folks. But I start thinking about this. Worst jobs, telemarketer. I would hate that job. But worst jobs might be crime scene cleaner.
Oh, yeah.
Slaughterhouse worker.
Gross.
Somebody's got to clean those toilets, portable toilet things. Sani can.
The honey bucket people?
That's somebody's job to do that.
Man, if I had to be a honey bucket person, I would just, you know what? I would have to just say, no, I am going to have to starve. I'm going to have to eat grass the rest of my life. I can't.
I'm with you.
Take this job and shove it.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I bet somebody's come up with a system. I'm going to actually look this up and I'm probably going to regret it. But there's probably some sort of a system where you don't really have to see what's happening.
Oh, they'd probably pump it out. And yeah, you don't really see it.
Here's what I would do. I would just throw the whole thing away and do a fresh one.
That's what I would do. And maybe that's what they do. We don't know.
Just throw the whole thing.
Did I just say doo-doo?
You did. You did. Yeah, I would.
Have you ever been Have you ever been to a park, a state park, something like that? And you go in the sandy can. I mean, it's not a sandy can. They actually have a building that you go into, but it can be more horrible than a sandy can.
Yeah,
but,
like rest stop bathrooms are.
Yeah, those are hit. Those are hit and miss. Sometimes we run into wonderful ones.
Yeah.
Other times they're just so like nobody's.
Yeah, most of the time, just don't expect much.
Nobody's maintained it for about a year. sometimes I've seen these little signs right above the commode, and it will say, please do not throw objects into here, into the toilet, because they are very hard to remove.
Mm-hmm.
So that is someone's job, because that's not a sandy can. You got to get down in there. Maybe they use a pump or something, but that's got to be right there for the worst jobs. Roadkill picker-upper guy.
I'm just like
animal urine collectors.
Animal urine collectors? What the hell is that?
Odor testers.
Hold on. No, you need to back up. I don't know what an animal urine collector is.
Well, I suppose at a veterinarian clinic, you got to collect animals' urine just so you can see, you know, have it analyzed.
I don't think that's such a bad job. I mean, they might miss.
You're hired.
You might get a little on your arm, but I don't think that does not rank as one of the worst things ever.
Some of them that suck, I think, a little bit are dangerous. Loggers, coal miners. I wouldn't like being a customer service advisor because they got to get abused all the time.
Oh, no kidding.
People are just not happy.
No.
Sewer cleaner.
Oh, God.
Or one of those mascots that has to wear a costume. I think that would be a horrible job. But
hey,
didn't
you have a, on your old property, didn't you have a septic tank? Didn't you have to have, somebody come pump it out every once in a while?
Yeah.
The septic person?
Several of our houses. In fact, the house I grew up in had septic tanks. The Central Oregon is volcanic country. So there's a like a layer of 6 inches or so, it varies, of ash and dirt, but then you hit solid rock everywhere you go. So the idea of having sewers in Bend and Central Oregon area just couldn't happen. They didn't have the technology. Now there are sewers going in everywhere because they can blast right through this rock.
Oh, right, right, right.
But yeah, it's not.
All right, what else is on your horrible list, Pat?
Well, that's pretty much it. But I've decided that the worst job to me, the job I could never do, would be to be one of those home evictor peoples who have to go to somebody's house and say, "You got to move out of here. Yeah, you didn't. You haven't made a house payment in 3 months. You're out of here." And well, I'm gonna get paid on Thursday. I'm sorry, you got to go. Oh God, I'd hate that job. There's a movie called 99 Homes that I saw not too long ago. Michael Shannon is in it, and Andrew Garfield and Laura Dern, and it's painful to watch because they show a family that is being thrown out of their house by, and that's a guy's job, and he seems to love it, just telling people, "Nah, you're gone," and then he, you know, they take control of the house and they flip it.
What? Sheriffs are here.
Why are they here?
My name's Rick Carver. I'm a licensed real estate broker. This home has been foreclosed on.
No, this is not happening.
I need you, your mom, and your son to step off the property.
This is not your home.
Mr. Carver, please don't.
Sir, you have 2 minutes. Pack whatever belongings you need.
Oh, my God.
Does he have to stand there while she packs up? Is that right?
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
That would be the worst job because you'd be here crying babies and people begging you and, not to mention the fact that people might try to kill you or shoot you if you don't get off their property.
One of my jobs that I had when I worked at the bank in my early 20s was I worked in the collection department, the automobile loan collection department. So my job was to call people and say, you know, "Hey, Pat, you know, you're 2 months behind on your car payment. You've got to get your butt in here and..." You're right. It was like I didn't actually do any of the repossessing of the car, but I had to put the order in because the bank.
You were like the mafia don telling your gunslingers who you want to take it out.
Well, that's a little extreme. That's not really how it went down.
You're like the big boss. Yeah, telling me. Yeah, yeah. Let's. Throw this person out.
No, they just, if they were 3 months behind and there were no payment plan, restructure, anything, then you had to call the repossessor. And our repossessor guy, he was stout and large and hairy. And I don't believe I ever saw him smile. And the stories he told about the cars he went out to repossess were insane. And he told us he goes, "I can't even tell you the number of shotgun barrels I've stared down."
Yeah.
Coming to get people's cars. So you're not wrong when you say that people. Once went to repossess a car, and the woman had opened all the windows of the car, parked the car next to a big giant oak tree, took a giant chain, and threaded it through the windows and around the tree, and padlocked. She chained her car.
Holy smokes! Yeah, I had a friend who had.
He's like, I can deal with this because he travels with chain snippers. What are those things called? Whatever those are, and he just snipped it and took the car and off he went. So
yeah, I couldn't. You know, the fear of being shot at, and I had a friend with a job like the one you just mentioned. He said he was actually shot at one time, not just threatened, but they shot. Now he thinks, I think the guy purposely missed me, but he could hear the bullet winging by his head.
Oh my God!
I'm thinking,
what'd he say?
He took off. You get in your car and you drive away.
Well, what did he say to get shot at?
Well, he needed to repossess the guy's house.
Oh, it
could have been a car. I don't remember.
Or he could have just been getting lippy, which is, I'm pretty sure, what's going to happen to me.
For the worst, even though being shot at, you think would be the worst part of the job. To me, I've always thought the psychological part of breaking people's hearts and shattering their lives and... Yeah, maybe they're deadbeats or whatever that is, but who could enjoy a job like that?
Yeah, it wasn't fun for me having to. And we had a quota every month we had to reach on how many people we got to pay. I mean, it was you kind of had to remove the emotion from it. I didn't stay in that job for very long. I didn't.
Yeah, that was a bad one. Working for a living, black. Working for a living, black. Working for a living, living and a working. I'm taking what they're giving because I'm working for a living. I wanted to mention one other thing before we wrap up here. And a high recommendation for a Netflix show. It's a comedy, but it's got some dramatic elements to it, certainly. Loudermilk, the one name show on Netflix. I think they've got 3 seasons done now.
I've heard of it, but I haven't seen it, and you are highly recommending it.
I really am. It is really funny. It is really well written. Great one-liners in there. It's just snappy and good. And the central character, this fellow with the last name of Loudermilk, is a music critic, or at least he used to be, and very acerbic, very opinionated about what's good music and what's bad music. There's a lot of different aspects to this show. But he's also an inveterate misanthrope. He's a sour guy. He's always negative. He doesn't like other people. And yet he's got a temporary job leading a group of alcoholics who are trying to get straight, he being one of them. And so he leads this group of misfits and gives them advice that doesn't sound like it's very good sometimes. I won't give away too much, but at the beginning of the second season, it begins with him walking into a coffee shop. And this is something that I have talked about on this podcast a million times. And I thought, man, he is saying it exactly as I think it. You and I have talked about this thing, which you called vocal fry. Mm-hmm. And you mostly hear it in women. I hear it in some men, too. But it's
mostly women.
A female affectation where your voice kind of gets like that. Rather than just speaking in your natural tone, you add a little crackle to it. For whatever reason, I don't know. It drives me nuts.
Me too.
I mean, too many things drive me nuts. But that one, especially because, you know, they're just putting it on. You don't have to talk like that.
Yeah.
It's like you just decided, I guess other girls around me talk like that, so I guess I will too. And so this is an excerpt from that episode of Loudermilk. You won't be able to get everything just from the audio, but he's at the counter. He's ordering coffee from this woman who's working for a Starbucks or whatever, and there's a little bit of line of people behind him, including a girl at the back of the line who really looks annoyed with the fact that he's ranting about the way this woman is talking rather than picking up his coffee and getting out of here so other people can order their coffee. So here's that excerpt. It's just killed me.
What can I get you?
I'd like a large coffee.
Okay, so hot coffee?
Hot coffee.
Okay, room for cream?
Totally leave room for cream.
Why are you talking like that?
Why are you talking like that?
Because this is my voice?
This is my voice.
No, it's not. I heard you talking a minute ago. I know you don't talk like that.
Neither do you, because nobody actually talks like this. You choose to talk like this, and today I chose to talk like this. Pretty fucking annoying, isn't it?
Why are you so rude, man?
Just stop doing that.
I can't help it. It's my voice.
No, it's not. It's an affectation that annoying teenagers and rich people use to sound like they don't give a shit. Except you work in a coffee shop, so I know you're not rich, and you don't look like a teenager. Unless you're a Eunice Kennedy Shriver, knock it off.
So just because I talk like this means I don't give a shit? And what exactly am I supposed to not give a shit about?
That's an excellent question to ask yourself in your actual voice.
Excuse me. Some of us would like to order.
Fuck everybody.
You're a total dick, man.
There. There you go. Good. You're talking.
Wow.
That is right on. And I just wonder, love to see somebody in real life do that.
Yeah.
Maybe it's up to me to do it, but it's just not in me to be that acerbic.
No.
But it's funny. It was funny, and I liked it, and there you have it, and that's that.
All right, and I have it on my Netflix watch list. Oh, look at my vocal fry. Oh, my God, I've got vocal fry.
I guarantee you will like it. And I'm loath to give guarantees about anything, but that is just an outstandingly funny show. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of truth in it, too. One night, while saying his prayers, a little boy was heard to finish. This is what the little boy said as he was wrapping up his prayers.
God bless Mommy. God bless Daddy. God bless Grandma. Goodbye, Grandpa.
The next day, his grandfather dropped dead of a heart attack.
Oh.
A few weeks later, the little boy was praying again.
God bless Mommy. God bless Daddy. Goodbye, Grandma.
The next day, his poor grandmother was hit by a bus while crossing the street. She never felt a thing. This is sounding like an episode of The Twilight Zone, isn't it?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
A month or so later, the same little boy was praying and said,
God bless Mommy. Goodbye, Daddy.
His father panicked because he overheard this. The dad spent the next day using extreme caution. Everything he did, he didn't even go to work. It took him 45 minutes to make the usual 10-minute drive home in the evening on the day that he did go to work. And he's nervous the whole time. He's finally met at the front door by his wife, who said,
"You're not going to believe what happened today, dear. The most awful thing. The milkman dropped dead on the back porch."
Good. That's a good one.
My mommy said not to put beans in my ears. Beans in my ears. Beans in my ears. My mommy said not to put beans in my ears. Beans in my ears. I think that all grown-ups have beans in their ears. Beans in their ears. Beans in their ears. I think that all grown-ups have beans in their ears.
Thanks for listening to Peculiar Podcast.
Hey, goodbyes.
Join Pat and Lisa online at peculiarpodcast.com.
The gift that keeps on giving the whole year.
And on the Peculiar Podcast Facebook fan page.
Sweet.
On Twitter at Peculiar Podcast, at Mr. Pat Cashman, and at Foster Chick.
Join us and live in peace, or pursue your present course and face obliteration.